Such creditors, such as landlords, are willing to extend their due date on rent, or other creditors, such as utilities, are willing to let a payment ride and loans to keep food on the table are possible. But when these employees are no longer working or are looking for work, the environment changes. They're less likely to take these same kind of risks on a person that's unemployed. The major groups that this bill would impact are the homeless, who live from day to day on what they find for work, migrant laborers who depend on prompt payment to get from one farm, one orchard, one location to another, and the young, unskilled, and low-income workers. It means the difference for some of these people between eating on a daily basis, a roof over their heads, how far they can travel, or if they can even travel to their next job. We've been involved in these issues for a long time. Because the law is strong, the division and employees generally have been successful in convincing employers that prompt payment of wages is in everyone's interests. For example, employees are not required to wait for their wages, and employers wrap up their employment agreement with the employee, enabling the employer to move on with their business with no loose ends. Some employers have objected to the inconvenience of the law. They argue they cannot meet the statutory timelines because of sophisticated computer systems, off-site payroll departments, or internal systems designed to accommodate corporate needs. These are the same arguments that the state of Oregon, as an employer, made in a court case that involved a Department of Justice employee who had not received her prompt payment and in full. The state lost that argument in the Court of Appeals in 1982. To my knowledge, the state of Oregon employs several thousand employees throughout the state and pays those employees through a central pay unit in Salem, and it complies with the statute as it is now written.
Can I ask a question? Please. That state of Oregon case, actually what that meant was, and in effect, that's a policy decision that should have been made by the legislature, and the state had no right to vary from the policy. Clarify the point about the court decision.
Yes,
the arguments presented to the court were arguments that related to the merits of the policy, and the court simply said, sorry, those arguments don't make any difference. You didn't follow the law. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't consider those arguments maybe in looking at the policy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that's correct.
Go ahead. Thank you.
We don't think that an inconvenience to the employer should stand against the needs of employees to feed themselves and their families, to be able to move freely without artificial barriers, and to be able to meet financial commitments to creditors. This is recognized in the current law. The most significant issue, from our point of view in terms of administrating this, is going to be the impact these changes might have on our enforcement efforts. Because the statute is now clear and strong, there is little doubt that the reason that a lot of these wage disputes are resolved expeditiously is because they don't resort to legal action. The law sets a certain time when the employees are to be paid, and in our experience, there is a regular payday in dispute enough without having a complexity added such as this. For example,
Go ahead.
Could you explain that to me? Why is regular payday often in dispute? What do you mean by that?
I'll have Mr. Tiffany respond to that. Representative Watt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Watt, and I think in our next testimony in our...
You want to identify yourself for us?
I'm sorry. My name is Paul Tiffany, the Bureau of Labor and Industries, Administrator of the Wage and Hour Division. Oftentimes in wage disputes, we find that there are no paydays established at all. And I think we've provided some data for you in our testimony that indicates as much. As many as 21% of the sample that we took over the last 4.5 years in wage security fund cases indicates irregular paydays or no paydays established whatsoever. And so that when you get into a legal situation and you're trying to establish when the regular payday is to establish the time certain from which you start computing the civil penalties, what do you establish if there's no agreed regular payday? And so you get into a lot of legal arguments about when the time starts, and that's what we're trying to illustrate.
Mr. Chair,
that does happen.
Representative Donnie?
Just an example. I just want to see how you would react to an example that I was thinking of. A farmer would usually that hires no employees at all during a harvest time of his crop for a month, let's say, just say for the month of June, he hires 15 employees for the month of June to harvest his crop. That's the only time during the year he has any employees. He pays his employees once a week. Every Friday he pays them whatever they've earned for the week on Friday. So when we get to the end of the month, now they've worked for a full month and every Friday they get paid on Friday. And so now we come to the end of the month. What date is the next regular payday? Is it next year when the crop starts again? Or is it the next Friday? Because, I mean, that's the sort of questions. And how would you end up interpreting that sort of a thing? Would you end up interpreting it as being the next Friday, or would you interpret the next year when there's a regular payday coming?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Domney, I don't think your example is too far from what we might run into in the enforcement of this thing. We get all kinds of arguments that might mirror that particular one. And that's what we're trying to point out here, that we would probably be involved in legal issues about what is or when is the next regular payday.
Mr. Chairman, first off, isn't there a statute that requires that wages be paid every couple weeks?
Every 35 days at least.
There is a statute there. So we're not, this thing about next season, next year is not going to happen. Secondly, wouldn't your concern about not having a date certain from which to begin a penalty calculation evaporate if we put in here 72 hours or the end of the third business day or something like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, any kind of date certain would certainly be an improvement over a term such as regular payday.
Thank you.
Representative Mannix?
On that regular payday, have you had any history, the term is used in regard to seasonal workers, as one of the only exception I see in there is for people involved in, crazy exception in terms of how that's worded. Seasonal commodities processed or handled when termination of employment results from fluctuation in or cessation of the flow of such perishable or seasonal commodities, et cetera, et cetera. Then it says that's due and payable not later than a regular payday. Have you had much experience with that particular provision?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that provision generally applies to the processing sheds and the canneries operations. And those, as far as we know, do comply with that section.
Is that an example of apparently the only group that has said, we have a specific problem, give us a specific exemption? Because that's the only exemption I see there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that's correct.
It's been there for a long time.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make one last point. I think Mr. Tiffany really mentioned on page 4 of my testimony most of the issues I was going to discuss in regard to the Wage Security Fund. But I would like to make one last point. A lot of these people need to get paid on a timely basis because they're ready to move on to their next job. A lot of these people don't have a regular home mailing address, and in regard, it's one of the same issues that I would discuss in my testimony on the next bill on both counts. When you're dealing with some of the employers on the fairs, those folks move on, and then you have the locals that can't find them in terms of trying to get their money. But you also have, in regard to this bill, you have the people that are going from job to job, location to location, and need that money to go from place to place. So you have the need in terms of getting themselves somewhere to provide themselves daily shelter, and the additional problem of how do you find these people to give them their money if they're not paid when their job is completed. And that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Should we have a special provision that says that all roustabouts for county and state fairs shall be assembled on Monday after the fair and shall be paid at that time, and anyone who is owed money by those people should also assemble at that time in order to be paid?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, is this April 3rd or April 1st?
Representative Domney?
Mr. Chair, Marilyn, a few minutes ago in testimony, we heard about carnival operators who are beating the law, getting around you. How in the hell is that happening?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Domney, I'd like to have Mr. Tiffany respond to this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Domney, that the statute right now provides that a person who is not properly paid does have a private right of action and a civil penalty of 1 day's wages up to 30 days for every day they are improperly paid. So I would suggest that if Oaks Park is not properly paying those individuals, they are in fact incurring a daily penalty for each individual that they do not properly pay for however many individuals are involved. The way we would get involved in a situation like that is if that individual were to come to us and file a wage claim, and we would in fact enforce that wage claim.
Mr. Chair, have you, Mr. Chair Paul, have you had any charges from people who work for carnivals?
Mr. Chair, Representative Domney, we haven't had any against Oaks Park that I can recall for quite a while. In the past, we've had several, and we do have investigators that are assigned to the State Fair and are assigned to the Portland Rose Festival. We obviously can't cover every fair in the state, but we do try to get to some of the larger ones, and we do work closely with the management of the State Fair to make our presence known, to make sure that all the carny operators and the contractors are aware that the statutory requirements as well as the child labor requirements and so on.
So, so as far as you know, there isn't a mass group of people who are not complying with the law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Domney, no, not at this time.
You heard the testimony of the previous witness, Marilyn, about the difficulty they have, and I think sometimes we make it so difficult for employers to operate. It's not fair to employers either. And they mentioned that it's impossible for them to get it through the computer system for payment, and we do require a lot of records to be kept. How would you address that situation?
Mr. Chairman, if we're speaking to 2979, if you're going to move on that, I would suggest that you limit it, you know, to a specific small exemption rather than a whole class of people. This both of these bills could have, especially 2775, could really have a grievous impact on the lower income people. You know, those of us that are sitting in this room are. We're not worried about where our food's going to come from for the rest of the day or tomorrow, where we're going to sleep tonight, but there is a significant low-income class of people in this state that are worried about that on a daily basis, and I suggest to you that's a real concern.
Isn't it true, though, that if they kept working, they wouldn't get their check until the next regular payday?
That's right.
I mean, so how can they pay their daily bills until when they aren't getting their check until the next regular payday?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Domney, as I indicated
Johnson,
earlier,
Johnson.
Excuse me, Johnson, I'm sorry. that was a mistake.
Let's not make that mistake.
As I indicated in my earlier testimony, a lot of the creditors are content to ride until you get to that next regular payday when they know that you're employed. I'm sure that I can remember as a young woman, you know, starting out after college, trying to make it. From week to week and day to day, I can remember when I didn't always have the full amount of rent on April 1st or something, and my landlord was willing to let it go until my next payday, which might be the 9th or the 10th. So, and that's what's happened to these people. The creditors are willing to extend that deadline for them as long as they know they've got some money coming in at a time certain.
Realistically, though, do these creditors, I mean, does the landlord know immediately that he's been fired or the job has ended? I mean, is the person going to run out and say to the landlord, look, I don't have a job anymore now, I have to pay you, but I don't have any money, so kick me out?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, no, certainly not.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
This is just an observation. You might be able to help me with this, but I know there are payroll services out there that are very efficient, and just using my own example, my own law firm uses a payroll service because they charge us $1 a paycheck to do all the paperwork we've heard about, all the calculations. And they can usually turn around a paycheck within 24 hours. Do you have some kind of feedback for us about this? It seems to me you don't need 72 hours to run a paycheck. Are there payroll services that are available even over weekends if people want to comply with all the paperwork requirements?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, I will address this question. Mr. Tiffany, I really don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, I don't know.
Because I can imagine you've hired someone for six-day fare, for example, and the fare ends on Saturday at midnight, and you're supposed to pay them immediately. Now, I could see that there might be some problem on Sunday. On the other hand, your point is these are the very same people who want to move on Sunday. They want to be paid at the end of the day. Maybe the real answer is to say that the paperwork doesn't have to be done anyway. I'm sort of thinking out loud here. They don't have to have the paperwork done to pay the wages. They just have to calculate the withholding and hand over the wages. Have you had any problems with people who tried to do their paperwork later and after they've paid people?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that's in fact what we indicate to employers. That we understand that it's not easy, you know, and it may be difficult. The policy pronouncement in these statutes, however, I think make it very clear that the policy seems to indicate that we care more about getting these people their money than we do about an inconvenience to the employer. Now, that's just what the statute says. And whether you agree with that or not, that's what it says.
Well, that's what we're discussing
right
now.
Right. And,
whether that's good policy or not.
Right. Okay. We've suggested to individuals that you have to live within that policy.
All right. So. Now, there's another counter policy. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
And I guess the point is, too, the clean break. And you were getting at that, Ms. Coffola. Someone's leaving. They probably don't want to go back and deal with that employer again. The employer probably doesn't want to deal with the employee. It makes it something of a clean break to say, here's your money, go forth, and we'll sin no more, or whatever. So, I shouldn't use that.
Yeah.
We'll go our separate way. And is that what you're getting at, is the clean break?
That's correct.
Want to go back. If they've been fired, they certainly don't want to go back. The employer probably doesn't want to see them again. Just sort of musing about this, do you get a lot of complaints from people who are in situations where the complaint was developed as a result of not having that clean break? If they'd been paid when they were told to go, all these other things would have gone away.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that's exactly what we run into. And many times we resolve these cases by simply pointing that out, that it's in everyone's best interest just to go ahead and get rid of this thing and get it over with. And what, quite frankly, what helps us in those negotiations is the fact that the law is very clear and very strong, and you simply indicate, look, not only is it a good idea to have a clean break and to go on with your business, it's a legal thing to do, and that's just seems to be helpful.
The real answer be the entrepreneurial spirit. It seems to me I could be very successful running a payroll system where someone could call me up and say, plug it in, Joe is going to be terminated today, would you please send over a messenger with the paycheck? And I could charge a reasonable price for that service, but we haven't heard the testimony yet from those who want to say that, well, we have all these computerized systems and it takes time to run it. My impression is that payroll services that are properly set up can do it pretty fast if they know what the wage rate is, they know what the deductions are. Put in a few things and the check is printed out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that's exactly what happens to one of our employees when we terminate them. The payroll services are in Salem, and if we were to terminate them on a Friday, which has happened, they get their check that day. And we have 40,000 or plus employees in the state of Oregon all operating out of one payroll system, and somehow they are able to do it.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dominic.
I want to follow up a little bit on that line. How long has this law been in effect?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Domini, I think it was the late 20s. And so the state's been operating within these parameters for a long time.
So I guess my question to that is in the late 20s, when they used to have to make payroll out with a hand and a pencil and a paper, they added and subtracted and multiplied and figured out what the wages were. In some cases, they may have had a calculator. It definitely wouldn't have been a calculator like we're looking at today. And they were able to comply with the law then, and now we've moved to technology where you can usually just poke a button and figure out what someone's wages is. I think if we've gone this many years with it, I guess Do you see anything more complicated about payroll systems today because of the computer systems? Are computers making it more complicated to make payrolls out?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dominey, I'm definitely not an expert on computers, but I do sort of follow along with your reasoning. Certainly there was at least more hand figuring. However, I don't believe in the 1920s and early 30s, they probably had a lot of the complexity of employer responsibilities in terms of calculating all the paperwork and things that they do today.
Representative Repine.
Thank you. You gave an interesting scenario of the termination of a state employee on a Friday. Give me the termination scenario of the state employee on a Saturday.
Mr. Chair,
comply with the law, please.
Representative Repine, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what happened in that case because we don't work on Saturday. So
you don't? You mean the state payroll department doesn't work on Saturday?
Well, I'm talking about the Bureau of Labor and Industry.
Oh, well,
an agency,
well you
I'm
didn't.
Sorry.
You weren't talking particularly about the state Bureau of Labor. You're saying the state employee.
Right.
So tell me how that person's terminated on Saturday.
I don't know how that works.
How would you comply with the law if you had to?
Right. If I were a manager, and the regular time for paying that person for that person's regular scheduled duties, I would contact my payroll personnel labor relations unit, and I would tell that individual that I was getting ready to lay a person off or terminate them, and that I needed to have their paycheck available to me on Saturday to pay that person as I tell them to walk out the door.
Well, let's assume that that person was working and you caught that person in the process of stealing something, so the termination was not predetermined, it was instantaneous. Tell me how you'd respond to that. How would you then meet the letter of the law?
I don't believe under current civil service requirements I can do that. I have to give them a pre-suspension notice. I can suspend them without pay, but they're still employed.
I mean, there's no gravest act that could cause you to terminate somebody on a Saturday? Is that what you're trying to
I can, Representative Repine, I can suspend them without pay. I can get them off the job. I cannot terminate them instantly like that.
That's civil service.
Okay. Now, let me ask another question. In some working conditions, there are people who are employees who have vouchers, meal tickets, expenses that are accrued against their checks, and they are deducted. Do you believe that those type of industries are able to comply with the letter of the law when they're having to sort through a week's or 2 weeks' worth of assigned vouchers for other items in lieu of, well, not in lieu of their check, but that is deducted from their check? Do you think that they're able to comply and find all those things and protect their investment at the same time, making sure that the terminated employee has been given all the dollars that they are deemed to have earned?
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Repine. You don't have to address the chair. Just go.
Okay.
It's easier.
Representative Repine, I would suggest that though it may be inconvenient for the employer to do so, I have seen systems where, in fact, all those matters have been considered and taken into consideration and final paychecks issued. So I, to answer your question, it can be done.
Okay. Representative Watts?
First of all, I have a little experience with computers. And I will tell you that, in fact, there are some systems, and I want to get away from using the state as an example here. Let's use a small business person as an example and his computer system. It's very sophisticated in his business, and quite often he doesn't understand it fully. And I will tell you that the majority of the systems that are out on the market do not provide for those kinds of things. Because as small business people, we hire people to work for us. We don't hire them with the idea we're going to fire them or they're going to quit. And I see a very real unwillingness on your part to work with that small business person. And so my question to you is there a willingness to work with the business person on an equal basis as the employee?
Representative Watt, we offer our services to small business, big business employees, any kind of employer, to further the policies of the that are written in the statute. We try very hard to come up with ideas based upon our experience and running across all these different systems that we do and we have over the years, to share that information with business, small business, so that they can comply.
Well, from Marilyn, I'll address this to you. That's not the vein I see your testimony in. You say we have a strong law. You don't want to change it. We think that there's a problem here, and I want to see a willingness to be able to work with everybody concerned.
Well, Representative Watt, I don't want you to confuse my advocacy with obstinacy. We are certainly always willing to work with the legislators and employers in terms of the law. But what I'm speaking to is the protection of the employee in terms of their right to get timely payment for wages earned. That's basically the statute that we're charged with enforcing. And the legislature in the past has deemed that to be the policy and will enforce whatever policy or law set that you change.
Madam Clerk? Yes. I'm still struggling with this a little bit. I recognize we are largely talking inconvenience rather than impossibility. I think that just about anything is possible in the business world. The question is cost-benefit ratio, and so far I think the fair people have made the best argument in their own respect that they have a difficult situation where they do have unpredictable hours. You don't know how long the cleanup crew is going to be working Saturday night. They need to pay people properly, but they also know that employment is over. And I'll add, looking at other elements of the law, I understand why they're concerned with saying that employment's over, because if that roustabout falls down or hurts his back on Sunday, if employment isn't clearly over, then they may have a workers' comp claim if they're staying in some facilities provided by. I'm just thinking out loud here again. I could see why they want to precisely say, yes, your employment was over Sunday morning at 2 a.m. Then the question is, the law doesn't give any leeway at all about delivery of the paycheck. On the other hand, I'm also concerned about the tree planter or the farm worker whose work is over at 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon and wants to move on before dark. Have you thought of some mechanism to allow some leeway because technically if that roustabout's not paid at 2 a.m., they're not in compliance. You know, to say you've on a weekend that you're allowed, if the termination is, if the employment ends after 6 p.m. on a Saturday, that payment need not be made until after, you know, between noon and 5 p.m. on Sunday. Have you thought about some specific exception to deal with those unusual situations? Because I have to tell the fair people, if you're not paying your roustabouts in full at 2 a.m., you're violating the law. And I'm not sure that, I mean, granted, that's still only inconvenience. I think it's not impossible to do it, but you see what I'm getting at?
Representative Mannix, I think I indicated earlier that if you were going to, address something different in, I guess the bill is 2979, that perhaps a specific exemption tied to a reasonable time frame, time certain, would be in order. I think my main concern is with the broadness, a brush of 2775 in terms of its impact on the people that are probably least able to afford this kind of change.
I won't beat this to death, Mr. Chairman. I'll just mention out loud that what I seem to see is there may be some given instances where some special window might be given, but if it's going to be, it's going to have to be in a very specifically defined instance.
Representative Mannix, we'll be glad to work with members of the committee and committee council.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
Sure. I believe in answer to Representative Repine's scenario, you indicated that the state couldn't fire on the weekend, so you would just suspend without pay. Have you just given the employees of Oregon, including the fairs, their solution to their problem? They won't fire them, they won't terminate them, they'll just say, you're suspended, we may call you back to work on Wednesday, and then on Wednesday they decide, no, we don't have any more work for you, here's your check.
Representative Johnson, I'm not sure what we gave the employees of the fairs. The reason I gave the answer I did is that's the rules under which the state of Oregon works. They are.
Okay, if a private employer came, let's turn this around, some private employee makes a complaint to your outfit because some employer did just what I said, which is on a circumstance where everybody knows that the job was over, but it was on a Saturday, and so the employer, to comply with the law, said, you're not fired, you're not terminated, we're just suspended without pay, to use your phrase, and the employer gives him a check on Monday, he comes to you and says, this is illegal, what are you going to do?
As a practical matter, we probably wouldn't do anything. But that person has a private right of action. It would probably be up to the court to decide what the actual termination date was.
Mr. Chairman. I have a feeling the court would apply a certain word to that, which would be sham. The problem is, of course, we shouldn't talk about public employees because you're dealing with civil service rules, right, and some elements of which are bargains, some of which are by statute, some of which are in the regulations themselves. And now, if an employer had that kind of a deal where they had a union contract and union contract said you will suspend without pay, I could see saying that's not a sham because that's what the deal calls for. But we're getting too much into some esoterics here that we're really getting into what might be something you'd litigate rather than be able to predict through social legislation.
Mr. Chair, just the policy of most larger employees, I don't know about smaller employees, is not to fire on the spot. Most larger employers take the position that they're going to suspend you subject to further investigation, which gives them a day or two to do the investigation to decide whether they're actually going to fire you. And in those cases, in fact, in our own union, there was an individual who started to file a complaint and ended up dropping it at the advice of your office because they weren't terminated until the guy, it was on a Monday evening at midnight, he got caught smoking dope, and it was Wednesday morning after investigation that they finally terminated him. At the time they terminated, they gave him his check. He wasn't terminated until Wednesday, until the investigation was complete. I guess that gets back to the same discussion everyone's having. The employer has that ability right now.